It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today. We are going to spend the next half hour together talking about strokes. I have with me Jillian Gordon-Peru. She's a doctor and medical director at EMMC Stroke Care, and Angela Wilden, RN, nurse coordinator at EMMC Stroke Care. Some sobering statistics for you. We know I'm all about statistics. Each year, nearly 800,000 people experience a new or recurrent stroke, and a stroke happens every 40 seconds. So I can't thank you enough for being here to talk about this today and maybe help my listeners out. So there is some myths surrounding strokes. Dr. Peru, one of the myths is the stroke cannot be prevented.
Thank you, Carol, for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here. Yes, that is a common myth that we hear, that strokes are not preventable. The truth is 90% of strokes are preventable. 90.
That's a huge number.
Huge number. The challenge is many patients are not aware that they are at risk, and so they're not aware of what they can do to prevent a stroke.
So what type of behaviors are they doing that put them at risk?
So most of it is not knowing what your risk factors are. So 8 out of 10 stroke patients have high blood pressure. Many patients don't know they have high blood pressure.
Because that in itself may be asymptomatic.
Correct. Right? They never have their blood pressure checked. They don't feel any symptoms. They never go to a doctor. So they never find out that their blood pressure is high. And if you don't know about it, then you can't manage or treat it. So that's the big one. Diabetes, having high blood sugar. Up to a third of patients who are hospitalized for a stroke, we find out at that time that they have diabetes and they didn't know before. Physical inactivity is another big risk factor for stroke. And then what we do with our diets. Some patients think it's just, just eating red meats. But some of the little things that you do in your day-to-day life can increase your risk of having a stroke. So having a high salt diet, for example, people don't think of, you know, that extra table salt that we add on our food. Not eating enough fruits and vegetables, that increases your risk of stroke. So you really want a healthy lifestyle and a healthy diet, and then to be very physically active.
You know, I have a funny story, or I think it's funny, but I have a friend who chastises me sometimes for putting too much salt because I like table salt. And she said, I never use salt. I have a very low salt diet. And it's like, well, check the label on that barbecue sauce you're sucking
down. That is very true.
So she never checked labels. Yep. And she looked at the label and there was like 300 milligrams of sodium, a tablespoon.
Yes.
So processed foods will kill you.
Highly processed foods. You know, a lot of times you don't think of what's in it. A lot of the sugary drinks we don't think about. Reading the label on those potato chips. I like potato chips too. Reading the labels on it and being very careful of watching your salt intake. And if you do be careful about what you are cooking and how much salt you put in, you'll find that if you can slowly cut down over time, your taste buds get adjusted to it. And you don't really miss it after you've been doing that for a little while.
It is hard to do. It's like with sugar. It's really hard to do up front, but you really do. Yes. After a while, you don't miss the salt and you realize that when you eat something salty, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Let's talk about more of the myths. So there's no treatment for a stroke.
So that's a big myth. Strokes are highly treatable. In the last 10, 20 years, I would say we've made major advances for stroke care. The majority of strokes, 85% of them, are what we call strokes related to a clot, an acute ischemic stroke. What that means is we have therapies that we can go after the clot and either break it up with a clot-busting medicine or actually pull the clot out. Those treatments, though, are only available for patients who come within the first 3 to 4.5 hours of having stroke symptoms beginning. Unfortunately, only a third of patients actually come in those first 3 to 4.5 hours, 1 in 3.
What are the symptoms that people should look for?
I'm glad you asked me that because that is part of the reason for delay. Most often strokes are painless. And so patients don't think, oh, I'm having a stroke because I'm not having pain. It can't be serious.
Not like a heart attack.
It's not like a heart attack where you have chest pain and so you know to come immediately. So strokes are often painless. The phrase I like to use to help us remember stroke signs and symptoms is the phrase FAST. So if there's face drooping, arm weakness, slurred speech, then it's time to call 911. Time to come in. Really, the signs and symptoms of stroke are any loss of normal function. So if you can't see, that could be signs of a stroke. If you can't speak, if you can't move an arm or a leg, or you just suddenly can't keep your balance. Patients with balance problems, dizziness, vertigo could be having a stroke. So it's a little bit more complicated than a heart attack because it's not just one symptom to look for. But I think the big thing I ask my patients to remember is if you suddenly can't do a function that you could do just previously, think about stroke.
If you have one of these symptoms and it lasts a few minutes or less, should you still be worried or can you lay it to something else?
That's a big one. A lot of my patients say, well, let me watch to see if it goes away. And then they wait a minute and it goes away and they think, oh, I'm good. I don't need to come in. But actually, you are the patients we want to find. That spell is probably what we call a transient ischemic attack. TIA is the words I like to use. And that is an opportunity for us to figure out what is your particular stroke risk factor so that we can modify it and actually potentially prevent a stroke from occurring. So if you do have these symptoms, even if they're short-lived, you should see your doctor so that we can try to prevent a stroke from occurring.
And you say if you are having symptoms of a stroke that maybe aren't going away, not the TIA, call 911. Do you recommend calling 911 or having someone drive you to the hospital?
So I highly recommend you call 911. A lot of my patients say, well, I can get there faster. The truth is our EMS team are well trained to recognize stroke signs and symptoms. And they actually have very good relationships with the hospital, with us in particular. They will call us ahead and say, I'm coming in with a stroke patient. And so our team is assembled and ready even before you arrive. And so that makes things go a lot faster and we can get treatment to you much quicker if we know you're coming in. So that makes a huge difference.
I think that is a really good point to make. Call the ambulance for those reasons. You may be able to get there faster on the road yourself, but you're not going to get treatment while you're on the road, and the EMTs will be providing treatment in the ambulance.
Exactly.
And when you get to that hospital, you will not be triaged probably unless you're pretty aggressive saying, I'm having a stroke, and you will sit in the maybe in the emergency room. I've heard stories for 7 hours. So they will, if you come by ambulance and they phoned ahead you're having a stroke, you're not going to sit in the waiting room looking for a bed.
Actually, our patients at EMMC, once we know these patients are having stroke symptoms, they actually go directly to CT. We are assembled, waiting on them, and things go very quickly when you call an ambulance.
You're nodding, Angela. You agree with that?
I totally agree. And we even really want you to come in even if it's past that 4-hour mark.
Yes.
We definitely want you to come in so that you can be evaluated. You know, maybe you've had these symptoms and you didn't come in quickly and you just go back to bed. And then you wake up and you still have these symptoms. Even if it's 7 hours later, we still want you to come in because we may have the ability to do something quickly still.
And that's a really good point that Angela is making, because now the window for therapies have actually extended to 24 hours for acute therapies for some of them, not all of them. And so don't wait. The minute you think you're having a stroke or your loved one is having a stroke, call 911 and come in. That is the best chance of having the best chance of disability sparing and life saving intervention being applied.
Because the disabilities are significant. If you wait it out, and eventually you will have to see a doctor, but you could be permanently disabled or die.
Yes.
Correct. From this. So stroke only affects the elderly.
That is a big myth that we hear. I don't need to worry about stroke. I'm too young. I don't need to worry about it. The truth is stroke affects anybody of any age. Actually, last year in the U.S., 34% of patients with stroke were less than the age of 65.
Wow.
So that's, again, almost one in three.
That's a huge number.
That's a huge number. And so everyone really needs to be aware of stroke signs and symptoms and what to do if you think you're having a stroke.
And there are at least two, hemorrhagic, am I saying that right? Hemorrhagic,
yes.
And ischemic.
Ischemic.
So what is the hemorrhagic stroke?
So as you said, Carol, there are two types of stroke. One type is where the blood vessel is blocked, and so there's not enough blood supply to the brain. The other type, the hemorrhagic type, the blood vessel actually breaks open and there's bleeding into the brain. Again, in that situation, early intervention is important because we can do things to either stop the bleeding or slow down the rate of bleeding. And so coming to the hospital early also makes a difference for both life-saving and disability-sparing treatment.
Just sounds terrifying. When we come back, we will go over more myths and facts on strokes. So stay with us. If you'd like to hear this show again, log on to WVOMFM.com and listen to it in podcast form. Stay with us. Much more to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. When we left, we were talking about hemorrhagic stroke. That's a weakened blood vessel, terrifying, bleeding in the brain. And now ischemic strokes. What are those?
So in an ischemic stroke,
ischemic.
The blood vessel is blocked by an actual clot inside the blood vessel. And that cuts off blood supply to that area of the brain. So sort of the description I like to use for my patients is think of a hose bringing water to a lawn and you cut off the hose either by a knot or something blocking it. There's no more water going through that hose and so that area of lawn dies. So something similar, an imagery to help you, is the blood vessel now gets blocked with a clot and so that area of brain dies. And so that's what an ischemic stroke is.
How do the clots happen? If someone took aspirin every day, could they avoid getting that type of a blood clot that would cause a stroke?
So there are many different types of strokes. Most commonly, we think about atrial fibrillation. That's an abnormal heartbeat. And that creates clots inside the heart, and that goes through the bloodstream to the brain. Sometimes the clot actually occurs inside the lining of the blood vessel itself. Definitely patients who smoke have a higher risk of the clot being on top of a cholesterol plaque inside the wall of the blood vessel itself. Regarding your question of aspirin, aspirin is helpful. It will reduce the risk of stroke by 1 in 5. For some patients, aspirin alone is enough. For other patients, you need much stronger blood thinners. And that's why you need the help of a neurologist or your primary care doctor to help you to decide what is your particular risk of having a stroke and how should we prevent it for you.
I've heard that if you're having, and I think this was heart attack, but if you're having symptoms, chew aspirin right away because that may help. Is that valid?
So I caution against that. Very often we do give you an aspirin in the emergency room, but we need to know very quickly, is this an ischemic stroke or a hemorrhagic stroke? Because if the blood vessel is burst and bleeding into the brain and I give you a blood thinner, then I'm actually going to make that bleeding worse. So I tell my patients, don't take anything. Come to the ER as quickly as you can. Call 911. We will do a CT scan as soon as you get there. We will image the brain and decide quickly, is this a bleeding type stroke or a clotting type stroke, and institute the appropriate treatment.
So don't treat yourself.
Don't treat yourself. Come to us. We will take care of it for you.
One of the other myths that we have is strokes are not hereditary.
That is a big one. And some people think, well, since I don't have any stroke in my family, then I'm never going to have one. The truth is there is a hereditary component. Some things can be passed on from your family members, but a lot of stroke risk factors are lifestyle related. And so you don't have to have somebody in your family with stroke for you to be at risk of stroke. Back to those risk factors we talked about. Not eating well, not exercising enough, ongoing smoking, or just having risk factors that you're not aware of so that you can't manage it. You know, 80% of people don't know they have the abnormal heart rate called atrial fibrillation.
So you don't feel that.
You don't feel it. It's silent. 80% of people with hypertension don't know they have it.
You're just full of goodness.
So I'm sorry to be the bearer of not great news, but we can detect these things if you go and see your primary care doctor. Go and see them. They will do a well check. They will check your pulse. They will check your blood pressure. They will do the blood tests that they need to do. A lot of our patients have high cholesterol and don't know it. And these things are chronic diseases that we can manage, that we can get under control and can prevent strokes.
And they're reversible. And cholesterol, they're reversible. Blood pressure.
I can't make it go away, but I can control it so that it's not dangerous to you.
If you have had a stroke, you are not alone, given the huge numbers of people. Angela, you started a support group for people who are going through this because I'm guessing it's a really debilitating and traumatic experience.
For sure, and it's lifelong. You know, it's I started a support group back in April, so we've met twice, and it's once per month. I was finding patients and families needed more support. So that's why I started it. And it's a wonderful group, and we welcome anyone. Again, it's once a month, and I can get that information. We have it on our website, emmc.org, and I can give that information to you, Carol.
If they just go to emmc.org, what's the phone number to call?
They can call 973-8278.
973-8278 mm-hmm. to learn about the support group. Or that
exactly.
just takes you to the stroke center, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that's good news.
Very good. There is not a stroke-specific support group in the area. We have a lot of brain injury groups in Maine. And what I've heard from patients is that they really like to have that specific stroke information and feedback and support of others who have had strokes.
And there's the music. So when we come back, we will talk more about this and things you can do, more things you can do to prevent strokes. So stay with us. There is much more to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. So if you are more interested in strokes, want more information, emmc.org, or you can call 973-8278. Lifestyle plays a role in this, and we can all do things. And I know that you're going to talk about exercise because everyone knows that that's one thing I just, you know, why stand when you can sit kind of thing. So one of the things that I saw in the research was physical activity, and they talk about moderate activity, but what does that really mean?
I think it's important to recognize that every little bit counts, and starting somewhere counts. So I usually start by telling my patients, we want 30 minutes of exercise per day, but it doesn't mean 30 minutes all at once. So start with 10-minute slots, if that's what you can do, and then slowly work your way up. Start with the little things and then build your way up. So start with walking. Don't start running a 5K. Start with walking 10 minutes at a time. Find ways to incorporate exercise into your daily activity. You know, I'm on the phone, so let's stand and pace for 10 minutes while I'm on the phone. Or give yourself a timer on your phone. Oh, get up and move every hour. Start that way and then slowly work your way up. So you need 30 minutes of the day of exercise a day that gets your heart rate going.
That's the question I was going to ask. So how do you know that you're moving around anyway is good. I've
uh-huh.
heard that sitting is the new smoking, so I'm probably doomed. But how do you know that you're doing enough? How elevated should your heart rate be?
So I would say be careful. If you've never exercised before, talk to your doctor first. You don't want to have a heart condition and then start doing something that you shouldn't probably be doing. But really what you want to do is just, if you are getting breathless and getting sweaty, that's probably moderate exercise for you. That's sort of a good rule of thumb.
A little breathless,
maybe
a little sweaty.
Maybe a little bit sweaty. That tells you you're getting your heart rate up, you're doing work. And then again, start in small increments and then slowly increase with time and see how you tolerate it.
And then you, so you can do vigorous activity with a doctor's permission, 75 minutes a week.
Yes.
Weight training. That's really critical for seniors to gain back that muscle mass.
Correct. Correct. So with the weight training, I would say make sure you're doing it in a safe environment. You have somebody spotting you. Don't go lifting the biggest weights in the gym. Start with the small ones and work your way up. Really, this is a long view. You're doing it for the long haul and not just, this is not a sprint. Okay?
And every little bit does help.
Every little bit counts. Start where you are. And just build on it going forward. Every little bit counts.
And it might be a good idea for seniors to talk to their doctor about a physical therapy appointment if they want to start weight training.
Exactly.
See if they're having any type of issues. So we've got the exercise, and you said with eating, again, watch your sodium, more fruits and vegetables.
Correct.
What about potassium? People talk about
so
that.
So we actually like a high potassium diet.
That's hard to get if you
that's
look
hard
at
to get. But you know, it comes with your fruits. So banana is high in potassium. Your citrus fruits as well are going to give you vitamin C and potassium. So if you start incorporating those fruits and veggies and replacing them, like just start by replacing a fruit snack with one of your chips. Start by, you know, looking for things that are fresh and not, you know, well preserved, because the more preserved they are, the more likely they used some kind of preservative, whether it be salt or otherwise, to try to keep that food fresh for a really long time. So don't give yourself a hard time. Pick one meal and substitute for that day. You know, so I have a lot of patients who like red meat, and we say, well, just substitute fish once a week for that red meat. And after you've been doing that for a month, substitute two meals with a fish and slowly work your way into it. We want changes that are going to be lifelong, changes that you're going to keep, changes that you're not going to be miserable doing. And so do a little bit at a time to try to make those changes.
What do you think of the all or nothing mentality? Because I tend to have this, if I can't do it all, I'm just going to go get a burger and fries. So, but every little bit really does.
Every
help,
little bit right? really counts. You know, if you lose 5 to 10 pounds of weight, you actually decrease your blood pressure by 10 millimeters of mercury. So that's that top number. So you can actually make a significant difference just by changing what you eat and increasing your physical activity.
When you say fruits, can people drink juice or should they really peel those clementines?
So be careful with the fruit juices. Some of them have added sugar, and the sugary drinks also increase your risk of stroke. So be careful of that. A lot of my patients too switch to diet sodas to try to decrease the risk of stroke, but there is an association with increasing your diet soda intake more than 3 times a week, there is an increased risk of stroke with that. So be careful with the diet sodas as well.
Oh no.
Water is really good. So when I'm being careful, I try to replace one sugary drink with water per day. That's a simple goal, easy to start with. You know, if you take the thing away completely, you're going to crave it, you're going to miss it, and it's not going to be a sustainable change. But just replace one sugary drink with a glass of water for that meal and slowly work your way through it.
And once you start drinking the water, forcing yourself, the next time you have a soda, it will taste like nothing but chemicals.
Right.
I power through. But, but it, you know, it does really, you lose a taste for it. Really quickly, like in 10 seconds, fiber. Is fiber important?
Yes. You want to increase your dietary fiber as well.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gordon Peru. Angela, always a pleasure. I really appreciate you being here. The number to call, 973-8278, 973-8278, emmc.org. Terrific information. Eat right, exercise. You've heard it before, but it will save your life. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.